tweet at TodaySOR.
Tweet, lots and lots of texts and tweets coming our way in response to Neil Walton. For instance, bought my first accordion case in Frederick Street 50 years ago for the princely sum of £4. That would have even been, I suppose, the same time we had parity with Sterling at the time, with the punt. And then another one, Paddy and Cleggan in Galway says, I bought my first piano accordion in Walton's in 1980, ordered in from Italy. 51551 for your texts. Now, changes to the family unit, whether through bereavement or separation, can have profound effects on children. Sister Helen Klein was recently named as Limerick Person of the Year for her work at the Children's Grief Centre, which provides support to children in these situations. I'm joined now in studio by Sister Helen and also by Anne Comerford, and on the phone by Annette, whose children have used the centre. Sister Helen, thanks indeed for coming in. I know you're a qualified psychotherapist, but what brought you, what led you to want to work in the area of grief in children?
It's lovely to be here, Sean, and I'm a qualified social worker as well, and I started my early days working with the HSE, as was known, and in 2001 I moved to Milford Hospice, and here I worked with the dying, and while I was there I set up a bereavement support group for children, and we also worked on a one-to-one. But I became very aware that there was little or no services for children. And then in 2009, in many ways my life changed overnight. We as a religious congregation, as you know, I'm a Mercy sister, and we had what they call a chapter. And that's a time where we stop and reflect. And part of that then, there's a mission statement. And one of the sentences in the mission statement was, in relation to struggles of today. And I had read a report that Limerick has the highest rate of separation in Ireland. And so from my kind of professional background, I was aware that there was little on those services. At that time then, back in 2007, I contacted my provincial sister Peggy Collins, and I talked to her about this. And Peggy challenged me, and she challenged me in such a way, and she said, Helen, okay, let's look at this. What is the research saying? And let's get a group of professionals that will discern it with us. And I was very fortunate, Sean, that because I've lived and worked in Limerick all my life and had contact with a lot of professionals. So I got on board, we say, doctors, medical, family therapists, people with a legal background, people who were bereaved. And we came together and we looked at it for 2 years and did a lot of discernment. And then in 2009, I get a phone call from Peggy, and she said, Helen, we'd like to ask you to take a year's leave of absence from your job as a senior social worker.
Right. And this idea of helping children deal with grief, is there much difference between, say, the grief that comes with separation as compared with, say, the loss through death of a parent?
Sean, there is, I suppose, a vast, in both cases, children will be grieving. But in separation, and from listening to nearly 1,000 children, myself and my many volunteers at this stage, when parents separate, children feel caught in the middle. They tell me that they feel like pawns. In a lot of cases, they feel responsible that something they did has caused it, unlike when a loved one dies.
Right. So there is that difference. And how then do you help the children, be it a bereavement or a separation that they're dealing with? How do you set about helping them? What do you do?
I suppose what I discovered again from my vast experience, Sean, was that what children mostly need is a listening ear. And so what we provide in the Children's Grief Centre, we provide a variety of creative means. For example, we have workbooks around bereavement, we have workbooks around separation, we have clay, we have sand, we have story and play. So the children find their voice in these methods. And what the children and young people tell me, that through, we say, play or through the workbooks, they are actually in control. They are in charge.
And is there, I presume there are different approaches that you would take, say, between maybe a 7-year-old and a 17-year-old?
Yeah. With the teenagers then, what we actually do, they sit down, we sit down and we talk. And a lot of the teenagers, and I find this again fascinating, they tell me what we like about coming to the Children's Grief Centre. I wouldn't have come if it was counselling. They like the whole approach that it's, we're there to support them and their parents.
And who's the we in this? I mean, you and?
Yeah, you and. And I'm very fortunate that as the as the project developed, a lot of professionals within the Limerick area volunteer with us. And I just want to again thank them today. We have seven wonderful ladies with say play therapy, psychology, art therapy, psychotherapy backgrounds that come in and work with the children.
And
also,
is this all done on a voluntary basis then, by everybody involved?
Yes, it's all done on a voluntary basis. We have a part-time administrator, Anne, and my congregation, she's paid. And we have a lovely woman, Geraldine, who comes in and keeps the place
I want to find out a bit more about the details of that, and we'll come back to that, Sister Helen. But let's hear now from two of the people who've used the service. Anne Comerford, you sadly were widowed some years ago, and tell me how you came to engage with the services provided by Sister Helen.
My husband passed away in 2011, and I'm the mother of three children. So there were 13, 11 and 5 at the time. And nothing, I suppose grief, it's only when you're dealing with it and when you've been through it, it's not something you get over. Nothing can prepare you for the finality of the loss and how it affects your life going forward.
Even though you had a long time, I think, to prepare for your husband PJ's passing.
Yes, we were dealing with illness and living with it and adapting our norm, which would be very different from other people, over a period of 10 years. But that difference between being there and living with the finality of somebody being gone forever, you don't know how it's going to affect your life until you live it and feel it. So I was very lucky. I work from home, I'm independent, and I was able to keep things going pretty much. My children's families life went on as it had before without Dad in it. But as you go forward, you realise that you need help, and it takes you a while to realise that it's a big thing for you to ask for help. And I was very lucky that a trusted friend of mine, the name of Helen here, had been mentioned by two people that I trusted, because your children, it's not everybody you'll entrust the well-being of your children to. And when you make that decision, it's very important that.
And what do you feel that you weren't able to offer your children that they were able to get by going to the grief centre?
You know, it just comes to a point that you have to stand back. And I suppose I was grieving, and I suppose I thought I was keeping things going, but they were dealing with a different me. And I suppose even though they're children, they're grieving, they're feeling the feelings as an adult would in a different fashion. So it's just...
And I mean, I know you're talking about the ages that they were, 14, 12, and there was a four-year-old at the time
who I suppose
wouldn't have known anything other than an ailing dad or somebody who was maybe unwell anyway.
I suppose when in the last year or so of treatment, he was very lucky in that he would have spent a lot of time with Dad. Mm-hmm. So I was even thinking back on it when I was coming here. A five-year-old, but a very articulate, talkative five-year-old that remembers vividly the passing and the feelings at the time. And I was just, some of it fades and you learn to live with it. But I was thinking of the actual morning they said goodbye. And, you know, I can still feel his sheer racking of his system. So he felt it very deeply. Mm. So even though at five, and the others felt it in different ways. But as you move on, you realise that, I suppose, the grief centre offered the listening ear. And I even spoke to, I suppose, the beauty of the grief centre is dealing from 5 to 18, so they can dip back into it when they've made that contact. Now, my eldest only made a brief contact, but it made a subtle difference. My second went in, wasn't going to make appointments, made 3 more. And I, as a parent, I would have given anything to be a fly on the wall.
Do you think they were able to say things and maybe be more open with somebody they were dealing with there?
That's the kernel. I would have given anything, as I say, to be a fly on the wall to hear what my teenagers, because I wanted to know, was I going wrong? Did I not do it right? How are they feeling? But no, they have total confidentiality and control over what they say in that setting. And that's what was key to them.
And when you say there were subtle differences, say, particularly in the case of the older one, what were they?
I think they learned maybe to, I suppose I learned in the process to see it maybe from their perspective to stand back, and they probably stood back a little and saw it from mine, that, you know, maybe I might be the mother that's yakking or whatever, and there might be a reply given as make me think of what it was like from their perspective.
Yeah, let's say hello to Annette, who's on the line. Annette, I understand you're a separated mother, and your daughter was able to, was helped by the grief centre, the Children's Grief Centre.
Good morning, Sean. Yes, that is correct. I commenced using the Children's Grief Project in 2010. And the one thing that I found for my daughter is that they listened to what she had to say, and that she was reassured that she was not to blame for the separation of herself and of her dad and myself. And it also, what I found a huge thing was it gave her the confidence to talk to her dad and to me and to tell both of us how she was actually feeling. And, you know, at that age, it's very hard. And it was John True as Helen said, with project books and with drawings and whatever. And we went every third week. We attended every third week. And both her dad and I attended with her. But she went in on her own and we were in the building. And then after 40 minutes, we were brought in and we were told what she had done. Everything was confidential. Nothing came out of the room. But we were told, this is how she's feeling. And how do you feel about that? And, you know, and I just felt it just gave her, it was an independent person that she was able to speak to that didn't know the whole situation. And I think that was a wonderful thing for her.
Yes, you know? And the fact that your daughter, I think, is an only child, did that bring its own extra challenges along with it?
Yes, it did, because, I mean to say, at the time she was 5 and a half, almost, going on 6, that's all she was. And it was just a huge, you know, it was, her whole world was ripped apart and she just didn't know, and she kind of, was it my fault? Was it something I did? And, you know, the reassurance that she got from that was great. And as I said, as you said, she didn't have any siblings and, you know, she was just reassured. And another thing that I found with it, at the end of it each year, they have a barbecue, you know, just a celebration in the summertime. And because you're going in there as an individual, you don't see other people. But when she went to that, it was like a big sports day and a barbecue. It was fantastic. It has been a fantastic day every year. And she found that there were other kids. She wasn't the only child that was in this situation. And I found that was a huge... She even came away from that saying, wow, Mum, I never realised there were so many kids who were, you know, whose mums and dads don't live together, or people who've lost a mum or a dad. And, you know, that gave her kind of some kind of... She knew, okay, I'm not isolated, I'm not the only person.
Yeah, Sister Helen, I suppose from listening to and talking to children, be they in a separation or a bereavement setting, are there common threads to what you hear from them?
If I could start with separation, I suppose what I hear from especially teenagers, they find it extremely traumatizing to be used as pawns. And so many teenagers tell me that. And can I share a story of a six-year-old that I worked with? And he was referred because he had lost his voice following his parents' separation. And the speech therapist recommended that he would come to us. And I'll always remember the first day, and I could barely hear him, and his mum brought him along. And in the second day, his dad brought him along. And as I opened his workbook, this is what I heard. Helen, it is very hard when your mum and dad split up. So I closed the workbook and I looked at him and I said, tell me what was hard for you. And he said, Helen, I keep all my secrets in my head. And I looked and I said, do you want to tell Helen your secrets? No. Would you like to draw your secrets? No. Would you like to paint your secrets? No. Would you like to write your secrets? Yes. And he started to write. And at the end, he handed it to me. And I said, wow, you've been working very hard. Tell me about what you have written. And this is what he said. I'm wondering if my mum and dad will get back together again. The second line, I'm wondering is my mum still friendly with dad's family? So I go, you're wondering if mum and dad will get back together. And this is quite common for children. And I said, what do you think? And I hope mum and dad will get back together again. How will we find out? I said, and this is how we work. How do you think we'll find out? And he looked at me and I said, Dad's in the waiting room and maybe you can talk to Dad about this when he comes in to the end of the session. And I said, tell me about the next part. You're wondering if Mum is still friendly with Dad's family. And he went on, and Mum was driving me to school last week and I saw my cousin. What age is your cousin? My cousin is 8. I wanted to wave at my cousin, but I couldn't. And I said, you couldn't? Because... Helen, I looked at Mum's face and she was so angry. And then we continued and we were about to finish up and I make up his name. I said, Tom, we have 2 minutes left now. And then he looked at me and he said, Helen, I have a picture of my family in my head. Can I draw it? I said, of course you can. And he got out a piece of paper and he put a black line down the middle and he drew a person to the right with gnashing teeth and a bubble. This is my mummy. And to the left, another person gnashing teeth, a bubble. This is my daddy. And then he put two letters, which I couldn't figure out. And I said, Tom, tell me about what you've done here. Helen, this is a picture of my family. They're like a family of bears roaring across a river at each other. Helen, that is V, that is S. Helen, mummy versus daddy, daddy versus mummy.
This is a child of?
Of six. And when I tell this, people think I make it up. And what was I found really interesting, Sean, he did not show that picture to either parent. He showed them all his workbooks and he showed them all his paintings.
But that suggests that he was really pained by being at the pawn.
Yes. And Sean, I'm hoping today, one of my hopes, and we say hopes and dreams, is that, you know, couples out there who are separated, to please, please think about the children caught in the middle, because that's what we hear every day. Children, they love both parents. They want a relationship with both parents. But the pressure of having to choose over mum and dad, to take sides. And so many even teenagers talk to me about the snide comments family members will make about their mum or dad. And this is hugely traumatising on children.
So try and leave the children out of whatever is going on.
Yeah, yeah. Please.
And Annette, is that something that you would identify with in regard to, I think you probably have a pretty good relationship with your former husband, but how important is what we've just heard there from Sister Helen?
Yes, it is. It really is, because at the end of the day, you know, they don't want to be caught in the middle, and they should be allowed to love both parents, even though they don't live together anymore.
Right.
And they shouldn't have to take, you know, they shouldn't have to decide, who to, one over the other, because they love both parents equally. And, you know, it can be hard. Yes, it can be very hard to, you know, to remember that all the time. But you have to constantly think of that, you know. You have to try and leave your children
and
out of it.
How long did your daughter attend the service then? I mean, is it an ongoing thing?
Yeah, well, she commenced in 2010 and we did the program there. And then there was maybe about 4 years later, she said to me, she just said, "Mom, would it be possible I could go back to see Helen?" And I said, "I will certainly ring," and I rang, and there was no issue, and Helen made an appointment with her, and she just went for, say, two more sessions, and then she came,
yeah.
You know, and that was, it's just something she wanted to go back. She just felt, she was at the time in her life that she needed to say something again, and she did, and that was it. Yeah.
And Anne, what's the story with your children? Are they in ongoing contact?
They know that the door is open, and it's like grief isn't something you get over. It's something that develops as they go through steps and growth, and be it Debs or leaving Start Her College, or they're facing into the world. Teenage years, like that, I suppose, the loss of a parent or not on the sideline at a pitch, it just hits them at different times. So yes, the contact is made, the connection is there, and it doesn't. It's amazing. The connection that's made at the outset is amazing.
What's the demand like for? I mean, what are they like? Is there a waiting list, or does everybody get looked after fairly quickly?
No, sadly, Sean, we have a waiting list. This time last year, we had a waiting list of 120. At the moment, we have a waiting list of 80. And I suppose I'd love today that we would see that we wouldn't have a waiting list, and I would be hoping that I'd be able to get some funding that would help me to imply. If we could imply one or two people, that would make a huge difference.
Well, listen, thank you indeed for coming in and telling us about your work. That's Sister Helen Callan, founder of the Children's Grief Centre and Limerick Person of the Year for 2017. That was an award given out last week. And also my thanks to Anne Comerford, a childcare worker and mother of three young children. And my thanks as well to Annette, separated mum, whose daughter attended the service for some time. We'll have news after this break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.